Today's guest is a speaker at the upcoming Stepmom Summit and is an expert on a topic that is very close to many stepmoms, high conflict.
I'm Cameron. I spent years building my career and creating a life I loved. And when my Prince Charming finally showed up, he had four kids in tow. Fast forward through lots of mistakes made and lessons learned, step-family life was much more complicated than I realized. If you're looking for help with blended family life, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Stepmom Diaries, where we keep it real as we dish about all the things. This is your weekly dose of blended family inspiration and encouragement. You're not the wicked stepmother, so let me help you find your fairy tale ending. Come on, let's do this.
Welcome, welcome. Today's guest is the co-founder and CEO of the High Conflict Institute, Megan Hunter. Megan developed the concept of the Institute after 13 years in policy, legislation, and judicial training with the Arizona Supreme Court and 5 years with the Dallas County Attorney's Office in Nebraska. I hope I pronounced that right. She is the founder and publisher of Unhooked Books, a U.S.-based media company. She has trained professionals in business, public service, law, education, and mental health in the U.S. and 7 other countries. She holds an MBA from the University of Phoenix and a business and economics degree from Chadron State College. She has served as the president of the Arizona chapter of the Association of Family and Conciliation Courts, the Arizona Family Support Council, and Nebraska Child Support Enforcement Association. She served 5 years on the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners and is one of our experts currently serving on the Advisory Board for Step Family Solutions. Megan is one of our favorite people to sit down and chat about all things high conflict, and I'm so glad to have her back. So let's get to it with Megan. Megan, I'm so happy to have you back.
Well, Cameron, thank you for having me. I love being on your show and I love talking to you.
Yes, and you're like a three-peater now, so it's amazing.
Ooh, there is such a club because I'd love to be in that.
You know, because you've been here before, I always like to start by asking for stepmom origin stories. We do have a lot of new listeners since last time you were here. So maybe just like a quick nutshell of your stepmom story, because everybody already knows that you're CEO of the High Conflict Institute, but you're also a stepmom.
Yeah. For 18 years now, I've been a stepmom. And in fact, one of my stepchildren, my stepdaughter, which is funny to say because she's, you know, we don't even use that terminology. But she's here right now visiting, from another country. So it's really fun. So I got married almost 18 years ago, and I had 3 children and my soon-to-be husband had 5 children. So, one of those 8 was already out of the house and 7 were still, you know, in school. And, they were kind of matchy-matchy age-wise, my 3 with 3 of his. So that was kind of nice. But we all moved into one big house together after we got married.
So you're also superwoman.
Well, I don't know about that. It took me a few years to adjust.
But it's a lot. That's a lot of kids in one house.
It is. And they were all teenagers. All 7 teenagers. There were 9 people in the house, and it was like blending a couple, you know, 2 different, entirely different cultures. We were a rural family. They were more city, just a lot of differences, like, you know, probably almost all families. So we had a lot of bumps, and I had, you know, handled some things well and handled other things not very well, because there's just it's not easy. So that's why you have created this whole new world of helping step families.
Yes, and we're so glad that you're a part of it. We love working with the High Conflict Institute, and you guys just do so much good work. And for those listeners who may not be super familiar with you, let's talk a little bit about, I think in our first 2 podcasts, and I did not go back and listen to them, but I think we talked a lot about sort of substance and talking about conflict and stuff. But let's talk a little bit about the High Conflict Institute. Like, tell everybody what you guys do and who you help.
So we started the Institute because there was such a need in the family court system. there was this, it's kind of where the terminology high conflict emanated. The high conflict divorces and child custody battles took up the majority of the court's time and resources. And it seemed that no one could help this particular population, no matter what education we threw at them, like parent education classes. And, you know, the cases just got very messy with, you know, parenting coordinators, custody evaluators, child therapist, child lawyer, parent lawyer, other parent lawyer, you know, reunification therapist, the judge. There were so many stakeholders. And in the best of circumstances, that would be very difficult. But when there's high conflict involved, it's going to be really, really challenging. And no one seemed to know what to do to help. And so I just kind of made it my mission as a business person who was working in the family law system at a high level in my state with policy and legislation to find a solution. Like, why shouldn't we be able to help families that are in this kind of crisis and they are back in court over and over and over instead of settling out of court, making agreements between themselves and that kind of thing? And that's when I came across a genius guy named Bill Eddy, who was a therapist who later became a family law attorney, and really combined the world of mental health and law to help lawyers understand and judges understand what's going on behind the scenes that drives certain individuals into the court process over and over and keeps them there. So he'd kind of figured out that there was this a personality type, not that it's in, you know, the DSM Bible for psychologists or anything, but it's a high conflict personality. And it's a pattern of behavior that just keeps repeating itself. A lot of unmanaged emotions, extreme behaviors, and primarily blame, right? It's all your fault. And so everything we do at High Conflict Institute is based around helping two different populations. Number one, the professionals who have, you know, handle high conflict clients or high conflict cases, high conflict employees. Let's help you understand what's going on with them and how to do things differently so that you can help them the best way possible in the way they need it. It's like really, truly meeting people where they're at.
Yeah.
And with the right skills, because ordinary conflict resolution skills don't work well for the high conflict personality, the high conflict brain. And then the second,
You can't reason with them.
Logic isn't going to work. So we have to flip. And it's just so natural, right, for us to use logic and reason and engage. But we're engaging in the wrong ways, and you have to flip that around. So that's where we started, was training professionals. And then over time, we've also added helping individuals. So almost like direct to consumer, for coaching, for learning how to use BIF responses, which I'm positive you'll be bringing up today, using ear statements and just how to do it differently. And we have online classes and those kind of things too. So help for people that are involved with high conflict people.
Yeah, it's such a needed service that you guys provide. And we've been so thrilled to partner with you on the Stepmom Summit, and you know, you're back this year and Bill's coming and speaking as well. And could not be more excited about that. And for those listening, we'll have a link in the show notes where you can go and get your free ticket. It's virtual, so you can watch in your pajamas, but the discussion with Megan and Bill is going to be really great. Let's roll into, I know you threw out the term BIF, and I feel like that's like such a good one to start with. And for those of you listening, you have heard me talk about BIF before. And it stands for brief, informative, firm, and friendly. Or is it friendly and firm, or does it matter?
Friendly and firm.
Friendly and firm. And this is when you are communicating with a high conflict person in writing. And I think that, you know, that can go to like if you're texting with them. And you know, for stepmoms, obviously, a lot of times it's their spouse who's dealing with the high conflict ex. But let me ask you this, thinking about the high conflict, and we were talking about this right before we got on. What if you are going through the BIF, you know, and learning about it, and you think to yourself, huh, I think I might be the high conflict person here. What is the best way to handle that?
Well, it's such a fascinating question because now, there's a couple of things. When you're dealing with high conflict, it's crazy making. And so just the most average, normal conflict average, right, type of person can actually have behaviors that are seeming to be high conflict. You might blame, you might lose your temper. And I just want you all listeners to know that's very normal. And so the way to kind of gauge that is if you're acting way outside your norm, like let's say you would never have an extreme behavior on, you know, in your relationships with people. So 90% of the time you're just perfectly getting along through life. And yeah, you get upset and you have these things, kind of things, but mostly you can imagine, you can manage your emotions, you know, really have pretty sane behaviors and stuff like that. But when you really overreact outside your norm, you have to pause and think, maybe I'm dealing with a high conflict person because this is way outside my norm for me. Number two.
So if you're thinking to yourself like, oh, I think I'm high conflict, then you're probably not because you're self-aware enough to like have that thought. You're probably reacting to a high conflict person. Interesting.
Bingo. The high conflict brain does not have insight. And so the high conflict brain is never asking itself, I wonder if I'm high conflict. It just doesn't. Now, we've done a lot of training over the years. And, you know, for the first 90 minutes of the training that we're talking about the brain and the high conflict personality and what all of that means. And part of it is all or nothing thinking, demanding respect, things like that. Right. And so we'll get to a first break and, you know, people will kind of come to me privately and say, well, sometimes I'm kind of, you know, I wonder if I'm a high conflict person because sometimes I'm all or nothing. And sometimes I cry a lot. And the first thing I always say is, look, if you're asking the question, you're definitely not high conflict. However, we all have a little junk in our trunk, right? We all might have a little all or nothing based on how we grew up, based on a lot of things. We might cry a lot. Maybe that's based on hormones. Right? Or me, I'm like a natural crier. I have the tears are at the surface a lot. I might cry, but it doesn't mean I have unmanaged emotions. High conflict personality has unmanaged emotions, which is F you effing blankety blank blank. And just, you know, might be throwing things, might just be get angry so quickly. And then along with it, usually comes blame. It's somebody else's fault.
So let's take a step back as we're talking about the high conflict personality. How would you define high conflict? I'll tell you in full disclosure, one of my closest friends is going through a divorce right now. And she was asking me, she's like, you know, I am having a hard time, you know, relating to my ex and, you know, getting things done with them. But it's mainly been like she'll text and be met with silence. She'll request be met with complete ignoring. It's like complete non-engagement. Is that high conflict or is that just someone being jerky? Like how would you give me a definition of high conflict? And then also does the silent treatment, you know, or effectively, does that count?
And it's such a good question because, you know, high conflict terminology on its own sounds loud and negative, right?
Right.
And when we talk about unmanaged emotions, it just seems like it's someone who's screaming.
So it's like always screaming. Yeah.
Right. But it can be other, you know, other things, but we kind of have put it in the nutshell definition of there's four characteristics that define the high conflict personality. And the way I kind of look at it is when things don't go my way, I might be upset about it. Like if I have this expectation that something should go this way and it doesn't go that way, I might be upset, but I can say, okay, well, just let it go, blow it off, problem solve around it. The high conflict brain isn't going to do that. So it's going to react in a way that helps them control the situation. And so it's almost like this person has an operating system that's programmed a certain way for them to react with these four things. Blame. Immediately, their brain says, I feel badly. I have anxiety. I feel right now jittery, angry, whatever. So I didn't do anything to make that happen. And so there's that lack of insight. So therefore, it must have come from an external source. So that must have come from you. So it's all your fault. That's where the blame comes in. It's just this automatic first thought is when anything doesn't go my way, when I feel that anxiety, it's got to be coming from an outside source. All your fault. And then often along with that will come unmanaged emotions. So that could be the yelling and the screaming and getting angry, but not always. And then along the third characteristic is extreme behaviors. So that's, I think, you know, for the friend in your situation, an extreme behavior, we think of that as something big, like maybe slashing your ex's tires on their car, right? Or dumping your garbage on their lawn or screaming and yelling on the phone. But it can also be, shutting someone out, right? Mm-hmm. Reputation smearing someone silently behind the scenes, right? Mm-hmm. Doing those shutdowns.
Because you're still trying to maintain control by being silent.
Right. I'm going to dominate you and be superior to you by not communicating with you.
Right. So how do you deal with it when someone, it's almost more frustrating when you've got that silence, then it's like you wish somebody would just scream at you because then you could like have the conversation or deal with it. How do you deal with it when you've got that, you know, kind of reverse situation, what you expect out of high conflict?
Well, we teach a lot about using ear statements, number one, to kind of connect with people. And it's also a de-escalation tool. I mean, connection in itself is a de-escalation tool. And the way we
do it. And for those listening who don't know what an ear statement is.
Yeah. So the ear statement is when someone says something to you that's, you know, putting you down, yelling at you, or they're escalated, or they're shut down. They're controlling you through silence. You can give a little ear statement, something that shows empathy or attention or respect. It doesn't have to say all three or be all three, but kind of a combination seems to work. But it just means using an ear statement is something like, I understand this is a tricky situation for you, right? And their reactive brain goes, yep, it's got to be all about me. And that, you know, she just made it all about me. So now I feel a little bit better. Now that brain gets to have some access to logic. So I'm going to use your friend for an example, has the key to the lock in her ex's brain. Okay. So he's got a shutdown. He's not going to communicate. She needs to communicate with him about the child's soccer schedule and he's just not cooperating. So you can use a little ear. I understand you're super busy these days with work. That's an ear statement. Shows empathy, attention, respect, right? Something about him. And his right leg goes, oh, thank you. Yes, it is all about me. I feel better now. Now I can think properly. And this is all subconscious, right? But so that's the key to unlock to the logic part of the brain is that ear statement. And then once you've, you know, have that connection through an ear statement and it's been made all about him, then you ask a question. And do you have ideas of what would work best for you regarding the soccer schedule? Okay. So you ask a question or you ask a question that focuses the person on a choice. That is gold information, right? Get people thinking between two options because it gives them less opportunity to hurl accusations, make disparaging comments or continue the silent treatment. Instead,
I love that. That's like a similar tactic that we use with kids, right? Like to let them feel like they have some control over it.
All of this.
Do you want to have broccoli for dinner or spinach?
Exactly. Makes them think, right? So when I'm teaching this part, I'll say, so I want everybody to shout out your answer to the question I'm going to ask. Do you prefer beach vacations or mountain vacations? And everybody yells something. I don't care what the answers are. It's just that I made them think between two choices.
Right.
Thinking is where you want people to be because most divorce and co-parenting and post-divorce conflict is around, it's just arguing over nonsensical stuff, right? Or it just doesn't need to be that way. So you have to get one more step advanced and sophisticated and learn how to manage that person's brain, just like you do with a child. And
I love that, giving a choice. That's really good.
Yeah. The choice stuff is amazing. I use it with my little grandsons all the time. And it's like, it just stops them in their tracks. And they're like, oh yeah, I'll have
totally.
And it just stops people from reacting. Okay. So, and you can also ask for proposals. So it's, but always remember, first thing is connecting. Just use a little ear. Don't use reflective listening. Like, I heard you say, because that's just going to be so hard. They're going to be like, nah, you're being condescending and patronizing and screw you, right? So don't use that technique with high conflict. Just use an ear statement, something that makes it about them. Empathy, attention, respect, connect with them. And then you can get down to business. So that's where you ask a question, or you ask a question that focuses on a choice, or you ask for a proposal. Well, what do you propose we do about this soccer schedule? So in this friend's particular scenario, I'm thinking that he possibly needs to feel superior. And I could be wrong. This could be a person who is just a very quiet person always. I'm sure your friend would know this. But some people aren't super forthcoming, or they're super conflict avoidant. And so they just won't communicate at all. But if it's the high conflict individual, they're using it as a control tactic, as I'm sure you're well aware. So using the connection and getting them to make proposals helps them feel like they're in power, even though you're the one that's providing the roadmap and this path for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they can get
there.
They can't get there on their own, but you can help them get there. And if you
well, and I love that, because I think it could be like, if you're texting someone and they're not responding and they're, you know, they're trying to sort of use that as a form of control, then you can kind of jump in with the like, okay, well, will Friday or Saturday work for this?
That's
you
it.
Know, and, you know, I feel like that's, and if you leave it open-ended, then it, you know, could encourage them to kind of keep giving you the silent treatment. I love that.
Yeah. Open-ended is always a great idea, but choices are a great idea.
Yeah, that's so great. Yeah, because it was something that came up, and I was like, gosh, we haven't talked about that. We've talked about the BIF and the other stuff, but we hadn't really talked about, you know, the different types of high conflict and how that might, you know, manifest. So that's just really fascinating. Okay, so we had a little bit of a blip there. I'm up in Maine and my power flickered. So we're back. Okay, so let's see. We were talking about the high conflict X, like through the silent treatment, and we were just kind of wrapping up that conversation. And Megan, I really do love, I love that question came to me today from my friend. We were talking about it, and because that is something that we have not talked about before. We've kind of talked about the BIF and all the other things, but that's something that I think a lot of people use as control tactics, right? So that's really interesting, I think, and informative for folks to use. Now, as most of the people listening today are stepmoms, right? So as a stepmom, unless you're directly engaging with the ex that's high conflict, which if they're high conflict, we hope that you're not, leave that to your partner. But how can they best support their partner if the partner is dealing with this kind of high conflict personality?
I think maybe equal parts giving them validation that what they're dealing with is really, really tricky, right? It's tough. And the other part, equal part, is not letting them go off the rails. And, you know, either become vindictive or, you know, badmouth the ex to the kids or, you know, anything. You just have to be such a grown up in these situations. So supporting a spouse or partner who's dealing with something high conflict means you have to be a little bit more of an adult than normal. So don't join in on any bad mouthing or being negative. And instead encourage your partner to use skills like using, you know, asking questions that focus people, you know, the X on a choice, or using BIF responses, or, you know, asking for proposals and just staying calm. So, and, you know, so I think, you know, it definitely is a combination of being supportive and being supportive in the right ways.
Do you think with high conflict personalities, is it best to kind of keep things in writing as much as possible and avoid the, you know, phone calls or in person? I mean, I know when you're exchanging kids, you sometimes have to be in person, but is it better to do stuff in writing, or what do you tell people?
I mean, if there's a series of bad experiences, if those exchanges and in-person events and it's causing stress to you, to your, you know, to the partner, to the kids especially, then do things in writing. And I would, I mean, honestly, I would keep decision-making things in writing instead of doing it in person, especially at an exchange. Because, I mean, when are you going to see this person? It's typically going to be at an exchange or at an event, you know, a school play or something. And that's just not the time to be having these discussions. So, you know, you keep those discussions light and about the weather, if you have
them. Yeah, totally.
And make the major discussions either, you know, privately, no matter what, whether it's by phone or Zoom or by email. But email is a little bit easier to control our own emotions. And if we're using BIF, you know, in those emails or any kind of messages, it, you're going to be doing the best you can absolutely do, and have the confidence that you're not going off the rails.
Yeah. So speaking of emotions, like when you're dealing with a high conflict person, you know, they are usually, I have found, really good at like finding that one little thing to pick at with you that like really makes you crazy. And I think it's really easy for us, for me here today, to be like, yeah, just biff it, you know, keep it brief and just use ear. It'll be fantastic. But then like when you're in the moment and that person is like making you crazy, how do you take that step back and really like with biff, I think it may be a little bit easier because you're doing it in writing and you can say, okay, I'm not going to respond for 24 hours and like come back. But it's still really hard because a lot of times the other person will put in all of this extraneous stuff like, well, you know, you're doing this because of this and I never liked you anyway. And, you know, all of this, all of this stuff that, you know, Biff tells you not to respond to. But especially when you're having a conversation and the other person just doesn't stop, like how do you regain control over your emotions, really?
Yeah, because these, like we were talking about earlier, we can get really fired up under these circumstances. So number one, avoid big conversations at events or at highly emotional times, like a funeral or something. Just if you know that something's likely to, you know, a light's going to be, a fuse is going to be lit, then probably just avoid those events altogether. Or you know, come with support that will keep you away. I mean, do what you have to do to live your life, and knowing that these are the most difficult of circumstances, because your brain is remembering those times when you were in the relationship with this person. You've consciously said, "I've moved on. We are divorced. I've done a ton of personal development. I've grown so much. I've learned to manage my own emotions so much better. I've healed. I, you know, whatever," right? But your brain still can remember that really bad situation, or probably more the repeated exposure to some kind of abuse or bullying, or just being put down all the time, or being, you know, belittled, or just not feeling like you can be natural and be yourself. Just all the time. And so when you're around that person, your brain remembers that. And your heart rate can go up so quickly. And so you need to be prepared. If you can't avoid, then prepare. Make notes.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, if you're going to be around that person, have an imaginary bag that you take with you that you can reach into and pull out anything, and it's going to help you. And one of those, or you have a real bag, put something in your purse or your briefcase that's like, when I pull, or put it on your phone, like, when I need help, this is what I'm going to do, right? I'm going to remind myself this is not about me, and I don't have to engage in this battle. There is something going on in this person's brain that I can't, it's going to trigger me. And so,
yeah.
You know, or it's already triggered me and I have to step back. And it just takes a tremendous amount of discipline. But the more prepared you are in advance, the better you can do it. So think of it as a business situation, like you're going into work. You're not going to lose your, you know, proverbial poop at work. You're going to have to manage your emotions, right? If somebody's really getting under your skin, it's just so much harder to do that with a family member or ex-family member. But if you prepare in advance, here's what I'm going to do if I feel triggered, if I feel like screaming at them, if I feel like hitting them, or if I feel like I can't say anything, here's what I'm going to do. Right?
I love that, because at the end of the day, the high conflict people, they have their bag of tricks, but it's not like they bring in new tricks. It's usually the same kind of thing. Like, you know how they're going to pick at you. You know what's coming. So if you can like kind of take a minute and think about the different scenarios that are going to come up, then it'll help you deal with it in the moment. I love that.
Well, you call it your, of course they will bag.
Yeah.
Right. You get a bag, get a label maker, whatever, put it on there, or your box or whatever. Of course they will, you know, or title of document on your Google Docs or whatever. Of course they will. Okay, so you've got your high conflict person, and you know they're going to badmouth you to everybody else in the family and completely destroy your reputation. And so it's on the of course they will list. And so you can't be surprised anymore. Of course they're going to do this, and I can't let it affect me. And I mean, it's easy for me to sit here and say this out loud because it's what we have to do it. But when you're in that situation, it's the hardest thing in the world to do. We all come from our own junk and our own perspectives, and everything that's led us to today is part of our recipe. And so if you've had someone that's, you know, bullied you for 25 years in a marriage and put you down or belittled you, and now you have to go around them and you're expected to act perfectly. And we think it's just, oh, it's going to be so easy. Well, it's not. It takes us a lot of work. And so that's why we do need to prepare. If you need to go to therapy, get a little counseling, do that for sure. And just be prepared every time, because your brain remembers, the body remembers.
Absolutely.
So it's,
But I love your last point, like, get help, right? Like, whether it's therapy, which I'll tell you, my family is a big fan of. We are all in therapy and have been for years. I love therapy. Get a coach, you know, have a best friend that you can call and talk to. But, you know, I think that professional help is always preferred. But, you know, find someone that can help you, you know, work through this stuff, because it is really hard. I think it's hard to do by yourself, because we as just women, as people, are not naturally equipped to deal with this stuff. We need people to help move us through it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I like that. And we're such nurturers that we want to take care of that other person and their feelings somewhat. Some of us, not everyone. And we can make a lot of excuses for really bad behavior that's against
us.
Right?
Totally.
And it can take a lot of years, and there's like not a magic formula of what's going to get you to that point. It's sometimes it's something poignant that your friend says to you, or your new partner, or, you know, whoever, somebody, you might hear it on TV or something, but, and the timing is just right. But I think when it comes to high conflict, if you can look at it as someone who has a very different, let's say, neurodiversity, right? So if you're working with someone on the spectrum, we want to learn everything we can to help that person succeed, right? To communicate, to whatever it is that's going to help their brain and in high con, but we don't take that on personally, like it's our fault or da, da, da. When it's high conflict, if you can kind of look at it in that same thing, like, okay, I need to remove myself from this and make a decision that I'm not part of the conflict anymore. I'm not part of that relationship anymore. That relationship's gone. The whole part of me is gone. I am making a decision today that there is a new relationship. I have to continue co-parenting, or my husband has to continue co-parenting with that high conflict person, but I don't have to get emotionally hooked by it. It is a different relationship. This is relationship B now, and it is handled differently. And make a list of how I'm not going to let this get under my skin, of how I'm going to react and respond when I'm in the presence of this person or having to make decisions about co-parenting with this person or the, you know, the more you plan and prepare, the better. How I'm going to handle it when I am surprise attacked, right?
Yeah.
So there are going to be those times you don't see it coming. And that's when I've found we can really lose our cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's, and look, life does happen, but with high conflict, you can get better and you can manage it. And I've seen a lot of people get better just through using BIF has been a game changer for many. And just this last week, I got a call from a very high level person in government. And this person said, after I learned to BIF in my co-parenting relationship, I had space to live my life.
I love that.
I mean, that's goosebump worthy, right? I mean,
yeah.
You just can't let this stuff manage your life. And if you're the stepmom and your husband is having to deal with this, you know, there might be two types of guys, right? That are avoiding, right? And so then you feel like you're having to fix things because your husband's avoiding all the conflict with the ex. or you won't talk to the kids or whatever. And then there are others who the husband's really engaged in arguing and logic and trying to be right or whatever, right? And you're trying to be supportive, or, you know, it might oftentimes will cause a lot of conflict between the new partners, right? So you just have to really step back and focus on skills, learning these skills and doing it differently and living your life and just not letting this stuff manage you. Because like the person said, I now have the space to live my life because I'm not in bed at night wondering how to respond to that email. I'm not letting those pervasive thoughts from that last text message just ping in my brain all day, distracting me from being a good worker, a good parent, a good friend of whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, Megan, as usual, I could sit and talk all day. I so appreciate you coming back. And I know this won't be the last time we have you, but I'm very excited to talk to you and Bill for the summit and for everyone to get a glimpse of what, you know, of the work that the two of you do at the High Conflict Institute. That's so important. So I'm so thankful that you spend the time with us today and that you and Bill will be a part of the summit in a few weeks. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. And God bless you for doing this Stepmom Summit and this podcast and everything you're doing.
That's it for this week. If you've enjoyed our chat, I hope you'll help spread the word. Share this episode with friends and head on over to wherever you listen to podcasts and leave me a review. And don't forget, for more great stepmom content, head on over to thiscustomlife.com and follow me on social media. Just search This Custom Life on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest. Until next time, you keep being you and know that we are in this together. See you here next week.